What we're going to do today is we're going to finish now the last part of Perek Ches, the eighth Perek of Gideon. And moving on from that, we're going to go to Perek Ches, which is beyond Gideon, but really dealing with his children. And the patterns are quite interesting of what comes out, what we see about Gideon in his children and how his children behave. That's where we're going today. Because remember, we painted a very sort of subtle but different colored picture about Gideon. There's things which seem to be so positive about Gideon. Things which he seems to do which have a positive aspect in them, but then there's a personal aspect as well. So when we finish up Parakas, there's actually another one of these ambiguities. Is last time, which was 2 weeks ago, we got up to the point where, in Pasuk Chav Ches, where Gideon has now subjugated the Midianites, and there was peace for 40 years. Really an incredible, long period of peace.
Are we supposed to take these numbers literally?
There's actually...
Dvorah
was 40 years, I'm sure I remember. We're going to see Yiftach is going to be 6 years. No, I don't think so. He had wars all the way through those. Yiftach's going to be 6 years. Shimshon's going to be shorter, just a little longer, but shorter than this. So I think it may be interesting that some of them parallel that, but certainly there's a lot of discrepancy. You're right. Dvorah was 40 years, and it seems like Gideon is. I would imagine it's literal in the sense that we see difference. We do see differences and variations. Anyways. Welcome back. So, over here, the land is quite, I would think it is literal, Tim, based on the fact that there's different other variations we'll see with other Shoftim, which maybe they're not as well greatly mentioned. But we see something very interesting over here. We see something interesting that posthumously we're told a few things about him which we haven't yet meant. We're in Pasuk Chav Tes in chapter 8 in Parakas. This is the last page of page 9 on there. So it says Vayelech. Everybody have it there? If anybody needs it in the Sansinas as well, it's Perek Ches Pasuk Chav Tes. Vayelech Yerubal ben Yoash Vayeshe Beveso. Sorry, this is actually just a little bit before his death. We're told that he goes and returns to his house. He had 70 children. Yotzei Recha, those who came out of his thigh. Kinoshim Rabbo Sayulo, he had many wives. What does many wives remind us of?
Some have been loved.
It reminds us of Shlomo HaMelech, and that was Shlomo's Achilles heel to a certain degree, right? Shlomo HaMelech's Achilles heel was the fact that he thought, as a king, he would be able to have many wives and not succumb to all the problems that it would create.
Except 18 wives wasn't enough.
Right, so exactly. So we're living in a post polygamous age. So it's hard to understand this in general. But a king would always have many, many wives. So it's fascinating that Gideon, the person who last time we learnt was the person to decline monarchy, he was the person who, when offered it, is the one who declines monarchy. Still has 70 children and many, many wives. That's just an interesting point to see. Another interesting point is what?
Pelegesh besides.
And now we have a Pelegesh as well. And I'm assuming it's not one, but he has a Pelegesh as well. And the next pasuk says, Upilag Shoy, and his concubine, Asher Bishchem. A concubine is a woman who's married, but without the same rights as a wife in terms of Ksuba. So she lived in Shechem. Yodolo gam hi ben. She also had a son, Vayosem es Shemoi, and he made his name Avimelech. Now that is a funny name to give a child, right? Because Avimelech means my father, the king. Right. So again, the same notion is just you just need to consider that. He has the man who declines monarchy, and yet he's the person who calls his son Avimelech. My father, the king. Again, there's this other side to what's going on over here. And also we need to consider, Avimelech could also be positive. Avimelech could mean my father, as father with a capital F, is the king. I mean, it could be something which is, whereas, as we say all the time, we have other names which declare, you know, the... Elimelech, well, that's Keli, meaning that's my right. Over here, he's using the word Av, but Av is used as well to describe Hashem. So again, there's these two lines going on over here. What's really going on? Is he talking about himself? Is he talking about Hashem in his very son? If he's declining the monarchy, why does he have 70 children and so many wives? That's something we have to consider over here. And so Vayomos Gidon ben Yoash b'seva tova, he dies at a ripe age. Vayikover. Vayikover. It's interesting. We will see as we get to Yiftach that that men of the sword they're more involved in these kinds of things. But it sounds like Gidon lives a good life. Vayikover. He was buried b'kever Yoash Aviv, in the grave of Yoash's father, Ofra, in Ofra Avi HaEzri, which is that's the family land. Ofra was the town, and Avi Ezri was the family section of Menashe. Which is fascinating, because clearly, despite all these ambiguities, despite the fact that he has this personal revenge on Sukkos and Penuel, despite the fact that he sets up this ephod, which leads people astray as a war monument, maybe even a monument to Hashem, but leads people to Avodah Zarah. And despite the fact that he declines the monarchy, but somehow seems to take the monarchy, despite all these facts, the bottom line is he's painted as a very positive character. He brings peace to the land, he judges the people, he dies at a ripe old age. The way Tanakh points it is, bottom line is this is a positive person, be it complex. Albeit complex, but he is still a positive character, which is what we see painted over here. And why this is important is because what we're going to see now is the way his children act will now start highlighting different aspects of this character, of this complex character. That's what we're about to end. As Gidon ends, now these different aspects in his character, these complexities, become delineated in his children.
It doesn't say anywhere that he judged the people. It just says that the land is.
You're right. I do seem to remember from this. I'm trying to remember where from. You are right. I don't remember seeing it. It doesn't say it over here.
So maybe
they
have a common description of both of the Shoftim.
These are the Shoftim, right. So, but I'm just trying to see if it actually says, as Tim was pointing out, where does it say that he actually was involved in judging them? You could say that it's Muvan Me'elov, but you know, it is worthwhile noting that it doesn't sound like it doesn't say it expressly.
It doesn't say he judged the people, he just led the people.
Yeah, maybe. So, in seconds. So something worthwhile thinking about, that it doesn't explicitly say in these psukim actually recently that he was the Shofet in that sense. We know he is part of the Shoftim, certainly. But the point is that it's omitted in explicitly. So that's something also to bear in mind, which may also lend to that picture which you're painting.
But in Pasuk Chavtad, it says, Vayech Yerubal ben Yoash. It's a very negative connotation of Gidon.
That he went to stay at his house?
No. Chavtad, Vayech Yerubal. Isn't Yerubal another name for Gidon?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So Yerubal, so it means
I don't recall that one, but it's worthwhile looking into, because there might be something else which might also add to the complexity. Although the pshat seems to definitely be that they called him based on his actions where he destroyed the Baal, which is positive. Right, so there might be something else hidden there. I'll have to check that out.
They also say that, this is just Derek Hagar, the iPhone is really the iPad.
I got the email as well. I don't know what generation he had, but... So now we're at after this, posthumous. As he dies, the Jews the children of Israel now go back after the Baalim. They make this Baal Bris. So they make it's a place of worship, a place of covenant. It indicates with their gods. Now Elohim over here is Chol. It's not Kodesh. So this part is basically back to the cycle of Shoftim. Remember, as the judges left, then the void, we sink back into the void, which is no different to what we've had, unfortunately, up till now. V'loy zachru b'nei Yisrael at Hashem Elokeihem. The Jews did not remember Hashem their God, Amatzil Asam Yad Kol Aveihem Misaviv, who saved them from all their enemies. That's a usual part of the cycle, but now we have an addition to the cycle. V'loy asu chesed in Beis Yerubal Gidon. But they didn't do chesed, they didn't do kindness with the family of Yerubal either. K'chol atova asher asam Yisrael, like all the good he did to the Jews by saving them. So now we haven't seen that yet. That's going to be the introduction to the next perek. Is that they don't remember Yerubal. This is, by the way, just an interesting thing. If this is whenever we describe good, outwards doing of good, there's always two parties that we need to distinguish. We need to talk about Nimsachein v'Seichel Tov b'nei Elokim v'Adam. We always talk about towards God, towards man. Over here, we've seen up to here that people have done bad in the eyes of God as part of the cycle. Have we seen them doing bad in the eyes of man? Not necessarily yet. It is interesting because I think this is parallel to the statement of La Hashem Ula Gidon. Meaning part of the success of Gidon, this is Perek Tes coming around, this is part of the success of Gidon is exactly the point that he is together with God. Right? In the battle, what's the war cry of the battle? Is La Hashem Ula Gidon. It's interesting that the revolt post-death is against Hashem and Gidon too. It's just very fascinating how that plays itself out in both his lifetime and then after his death. That's something to consider. So now what is it? What is it about there then that they're being disloyal to Gidon himself and his family? So the story continues in Perek Tes. Everybody managed to have a copy yet? Okay. Roz, you got one? By the way, next time you should know, just highlights. I've streamlined this a lot more. I've thought a lot more about this. Next time I'm creating a booklet, and next time it's going to have the everything all in one place. It's going to have space for notes. It's going to have all the sources and maps all in one thing. So I'll give you one handout. It'll be easier to look after that one thing, and it'll be much easier to work with. So improving. So that's one of the things. Maybe I'll make a name slot as well. I will bring extras, and if anybody wants to keep, I can keep. But I think it'll be easier that way than looking after. As we've seen, there's lots of handouts there, and you have everything right there, even simpler. So here we go. So now, Vayelech Avimelech ben Yerubal Shechem. So Avimelech goes to Shechem. Why is Avimelech connected to Shechem? Because that's where he was born. Okay. So yeah, he was born there. So just important. This is his place of birth. El Achei Imoy, to the brothers of his mother, meaning, and not the brothers of his father, right? Because the brothers of his father are the stepbrothers who are the sons of Gidon who are the heirs to the kingship. His half-brothers. Vaydaber, half-brothers, exactly. Vaydaber Elohim ve'es kol mishpacha ve'el kol mishpachas beis avi imoy lemor. He says, speaks to his real brothers and to their entire family, saying, Dabruna ba'ozne kol ba'alei Shechem. Please speak to all the ba'alei Shechem. These are the stronger men of Shechem. Matov lochem hamshel bochem shivim ish kochol b'nei Yerubal. Why do you want to have 70 men ruling over you? Im mashal bochem ish echad. If one man can rule over you, uzchartem ki atzmechem uvesarchem ani. And also, P.S., remember, I'm your flesh, meaning I'm your relation. So two arguments over here. Why have many people ruling over you? Now, this should just prick up our ears over here as well. Here's another instance of Gidon's monarchy veiled. Because we don't have other Shoftim up till now whose children are involved in the same business. We don't know what happened to them. I'm sure it was important in that generation, but it's not important to us in history that it should have been recorded enough. But it seems from the way he's describing it that it was important for that the children of Gidon were ruling after him. It just happened to be a cabinet. There was a whole 70 of them rather than one. So his contention is, so why 70? But you just see from the way it's playing out in history that it is very kingly, that there is a continuum over here. The children of Gidon are in his place.
It's almost like the kingdom, and he's inheriting the kingdom.
Right, they've inherited the kingdom, which has not happened with Shoftim. Absolutely, we've not seen this. So he argues that it shouldn't be this way. And they respond to him in Pasuk Gimel, Vayidaberu Achei Imo Alav, and the brothers of his mother respond saying, Bozne Kol Balei Shechem, in the hearing of all the people in Shechem, or the stronger people of Shechem, Eis Kol HaDvarim O'Ele, these matters, Vayet Libom Acharei Avimelech. And they were convinced by Avimelech, Ki Omru Achinuhu, because they said we are his brother. Now, that's, by the way, just showing you what's the point of convincing is the emotional side. It's interesting, right? Meaning he made two arguments. One argument was why do we should have so many leaders? We should have one leader. And the other argument was, well, we're all family. The argument they're responding to is Daber Libom is the emotional argument, which seems to be just an important point. When if you ever need to create a revolt, that's going to be the thing which is going to work is the emotional aspect, not necessarily the logical one.
Until then, did they have like a centralized government at all, except for the Kohanim and the?
We don't see anything of it.
So this is a very, very big change.
Yeah, it is an exceptional big change. It's many people and it's a continuing. So both together, we have this idea of many people. Now, we don't know the timeline. We don't know how long this is occurring after the death that there was such a system in place. That's something to we don't know. It could be a week. It could be a month, it could be a year. The longer you paint it, the easier it is for people to be convinced by him, if you think about it, because then they've got used to the system, they see all the problems with it. So maybe.
Continue. Because he's talking about Moshe,
yes.
Somebody who's ruling.
They're ruling,
and
right.
We haven't had that before.
We haven't had rulers, exactly, and specifically a party.
But on the other hand, very much like the other Shoftim, because it's just one territory. It's not all of Am Yisrael, it's just like you would mention, you know, the Sheva.
Well, Shechem is where Shechem is going to be the seat of rebellion at this point in time. So that's why the focus over here. We do see generally, you're right. The Shoftim seem to be more focused around this particular tribe in which they were. But we should also remember is that the Sheket that it talks about against the Jews seems to be unilateral, meaning the Midianites who are forced back now are not attacking all the other tribes and just Menashe and, you know, the northern tribes as we were defended are in quiet. It seems that all the Jews. So although the leading party may be in the Menashe territory, but nevertheless it seems like so you're right. We don't know enough, although it does seem centered in his family territory. Yes.
Thought
point is that so Rashi points out three things which happened in Shechem. There were three. Is first of all was Dina, which there was a tension already there between the tribes as well, because of the, as our foreman points out, between the Leah brothers and the Rachel brothers, because only the Leah ones were to take action on their sister. There's the Yosef, which is again the tension of the brothers, and finally the splitting of the kingdom, which was the northern and southern kingdom, which was Ephraim and Yehuda, effectively, which is again the same split. I think that it is meaningful in the sense that once we have the king, the next stage is a split. That it's just interesting how that works. We have a king and then the split. And where's the split starting from? It's starting from the same place in Shechem. So I think that's meaningful in that sense. It's like a sort of a parallel to the splitting, which is going to occur later, to the greater kingdom.
Breakaway.
Give it a week, right? Give it 1 week. Exactly, and specifically paranut of tension between specific tribes and branching away into different communities. So that's why this is also important. Once we have met our melech, so to speak, our hidden melech. So now they listen to him. And of course, a little bit of good money doesn't go to harm. So he gives them money from the house of Baal Bris, which is Avodah Zarah. So he rents a bunch of empty and how would you translate the word pochaz in this case? Yes, so that's exactly the parallel I was thinking of. Reuven is described as pachaz kamaim, unstable like water. So if you want to have an army of people going to help you, you know, it always helps to have people who are somewhat unstable and psychologically not sound, because then they'll do whatever you need, right?
No,
so
we saw the opposite when they went down, crouched down to lick the water.
Right.
As opposed,
that's an interesting parallel.
I mean, no, but
it's an interesting parallel. Meaning, Gideon's army was made up of very strong people,
right.
Whereas the army of Avimelech, his son, is made up of exactly the opposite. These unstable people who are going to be swayed by money and emotion or whatever it is. And you'll see that they're going to be swayed either direction as well. Yes, so now that's something you need to think about. David HaMelech also, and you'll see later, Yiftach also. Now, Yiftach, there's also, David HaMelech also has, now I don't remember the exact words that it describes it.
Maybe but it's just that the people that were attracted to David at the time, not that they were light-headed, but they were attracted to him because they didn't have a permanent life tied, and they were able to go with this Melech that was running away.
Right, so that's more of a positive take on that. So we have to, whatever we say here, we have to consider as well with all the other people this happens to, and that's the Yiftach and David as well, just explicitly. So you're right. And how does that work with David? It seems like they've got less to lose as well, and they can maybe follow ideals more. That in the David HaMelech case, it might be negative.
They seem right. to be carefree men.
Right, exactly.
They were carefree, period. So therefore they were able to do this.
With David HaMelech.
They have responsibilities.
Right, and equally over here, the word rekem does sound like a negative thing. Empty people as well, but you're right, they're able to just be able to pick up, able to take whatever that deal that comes their way.
Does it maybe also want to show that he is more secure, the Avimelech is more secure? Because Gideon was asking this question because he wasn't really sure what is going on. So show me, please. And this one, he just takes those.
I hear that. I would go the opposite direction. I would say that Gideon is more sure of his position, which is why he's prepared to thin out the troops. He's trying to get whoever he wants. I would say that Avimelech is pulling at the ends of the strings over here to create an army of mercenaries, and in that regard, he's going to take whoever. That's how I would argue.
Then there would be strong ones as well.
What was that?
Then he would have strong ones as well.
He does. I think they may be strong, but they're not necessarily stable people. The reason why we're going to see they're not stable is who's going to stay. Avimelech's rebellion is not going to be long. So we're going to see that these people are swingers. They'll go either direction.
Well, whoever pays them.
What was that?
Whoever pays them.
Also with Gideon, his test, as Mrs. Liebenstein said, was a test of Emuna to a Kadosh Baruch Hu.
Yes.
There was a test. And here in the same pasuk it says, Vibeg Baal Brit. So they came from a place of so his test wasn't like Gideon, his father's.
Not at all.
The way they raised the water to their mouth. It's the exact opposite.
Okay, so point well taken. So in the leadership, yeah.
They're mercenaries.
In that point, right, this is clearly not an expression of any form of emuna at all. This is exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So these people follow him. He has this following now. What does he do with them? So he comes to his father's house in Ofras. He kills all 70 of his brothers, al evan achas, on one stone. This is a kind of imagery which we've seen, Tanakh uses a number of times. Al Naharos Bavel is one instance. It's an imagery of a massacre. That's the imagery which is being brought up over here. He kills everybody. Vayivaser Yosam ben Yerubal, and all who is left is Yosam, the only child, Hakaton, the smallest, Kinechba, because he hid. Interesting. This is just a note. I don't know if this is meaningful, but it is worthwhile that the word for an orphan in Hebrew is Yatom. If you just place the vav after his after the taf, so it is interesting that he is in a certain sense orphaned of his brethren over here. And he remains the smallest of all them. So, something to think about. There's something else in the name which we'll get to in a few moments. Vayasu ko Bale Shechem. So, all the Bale Shechem, the strong people of Shechem, gather. Kuvacho Beis Milo, and all the people of Beth Milo, which is a different area. Vayalchu vayamlichu es Avimelech lemelech. They actually make him into a king. So this is now the Gideon, but in a sense, explicit. What Gideon maybe was indicating, he didn't take, he wasn't there to take it, but Avimelech goes the full route. He goes all the way in, and is not ashamed to take the position of king. Im Elon Mutzav Asher B'Shem, by the pillar of Elon, which is in Shem. So you see that is interesting. When we look at this person over here, we're going to see a number of the negative aspects of Gideon going to be all concentrated in this person called Avimelech. So the first thing you see over here is he's put in the same position, but not only does he not decline melucha, he usurps melucha. Okay, so that's the first parallel we should be aware of, which is being painted for us. And now, in response to this terrible incident, They are Gidel Yosam, and this is told to Yosam, or they tell Yosam more correctly. The happenings of the king, it sounds like. I think it's clear that he knew about the murder, because he escaped. But it seems like the next stage of the melucha. Vayelech ve'amod barosh har grizim, and he went up onto the mount of Har Grizim, which is the place in the Torah that...
They shouted back.
That the brachot and klalot were given. If I'm not mistaken, Grizim is the... I think it's the klalot. I'm not mistaken. I need to just go back there.
Har Eval.
And there's Har Eval. Grizim is the...
It's not far there. It overlooks...
They're right there. Yeah. Har Grizim is Har Eval. Okay, to be checked out. It's the place of the brachot and the klalot. I need to check which one is Har Grizim. It's going to be interesting because he's going to lay a curse. Okay, so Yotam is getting up on Har Grizim and he's laying a curse down. Interesting reference back over there. Sorry, what was that?
Probably not so young. Even though he's the youngest.
Yes. Young and small don't necessarily mean young and small as we think of them, because he's a fully grown man. We don't know the timeline right now, because we don't know how many years afterwards again that this government was in place before it was massacred. So that's a bit of a difficult part. Vayikra, and he says, Vayomer Lohem, he calls out and says, he's making a proclamation. Shimu elai ba'alei Shechem, listen to me, the strong people. Shechem vayishma aleichem elokim. And the yishma aleichem elokim. And then God may listen to you. So this is sort of picking up their attention. I've got something to say which will help you be listened to by God. Now I'd like to just read through the entire, he's going to give a parable over here, and then let's come back and then we'll analyze the pieces. Okay, so let's get the full picture. We'll come back to what it means. So he says an interesting parable. Holoch holchu ei ha'itzim nimshach aleihem melech. The woods or the trees went to appoint a king on them. Vayamru l'zayis, and they said to the olive tree, Molcho aleinu, you rule over us. Vayamru lahem azayis, and the zayis, the olive tree, said to them, Hech dalti yestishni asher yechabdu yechabdu elokim vanoshim. I am keeping my fatness so that I may honor Hashem and man. Again, that the idea of man and Hashem together is interesting in this parasha. V'alachti lo nu'a ala etzim. And I will... Why should I go and sway over the trees? Meaning, I don't need the malchus. I'm taking care of my own needs. V'yamro etzim l'ta'ina. And then the wood went to the fig tree. L'chi at molchi aleinu. You should rule over us. V'yamro lahem, and the fig tree replied, Hechdalti es moski ves tnuvasi hatova. Should I leave my sweetness and my produce, my good produce, v'halachti lo nu'a ala etzim? That I should go and sway myself over the woods? Again, a concern for self-preservation, seems like, not to rule. V'yamro etzim lo negefen, the third prospective leader is the gefen, which is the vine. Lechi at molchi aleinu. You should be the ruler. V'atom Elohim ha'gefen hechdalti es tiroshi ha'masameh elokim v'anashim. I'm withholding, or should I withhold my produce, which makes men and God happy, which is the wine. V'alakti lo nu'a la'etzim, and I should go and rule over or sway over the trees. V'ayimru kol ha'etzim el ha'atad. And therefore, in response to that, they go to the thorn bush. Lecha ta melach aleinu. You become the leader. Well, slim pickings, right? V'ayomer ha'atad el ha'etzim. And the atad, this thorn bush, or the bramble, says to the trees, Im be'emes ata moshchim osi l'melech aleichem. If you really want me to be a king, bo'u chasu b'tzili. You know what? Rest in my shade. Interesting. V'im'ayin teitzei esh min ha'atad. And if not, a fire will come out of the bramble, but Achalis Arzei HaLevonon, and it will consume the cedars of Lebanon. Those are the tallest trees. Va'ata, now we've stepped out of story. Yosam speaks. Va'ata, in the emes of Tamei Masisem, if you're doing truthfully, Va'tamelichu es Avimelech, and you are making a ruler Avimelech, V'im tova asisem im Yerubal im Be'esai, and if you are really doing good, you're paying homage to the house of Yerubal and Gidon, and you've done what you deserve to pay him back. Because my father fought for you. And he put his soul on the line. And he saved you from the Midianites. And you got up against my father's house. Today, and you killed the 70 of his sons. On one stone. And you only put Abimelech, the son of his maidservant, al-Balei Shechem, ki achichem hu, because he's your brother. then v'im be'emes uv'tamim asisem. If you really did this truthfully, searching the truth, im Yerubal v'im be'esor, with Yerubal in his house, hayom azeh simchu v'amir v'merach v'yismach gam hul b'achem. If it's all true, if you have the right intentions, you know what? Then he will make you happy, you will make him happy, it'll be a wonderful relationship. V'im ayin. But if not, teitzei esh me'avimelech. Like the story, the fire will leave Avimelech, who's clearly the thorn bush, v'tochal es balei Shechem, and it will consume the strong powers of Shechem v'es beis miloi, and those are the people who are anointed him from beis miloi. V'teitzei esh mibalei Shechem v'beis miloi v'tochal es Avimelech. Instead of a mutual relationship of growth, a mutual beneficial relationship, there will be a mutually destructive relationship. They will kill each other. Vayonos Yosam, and at the end of his words, he fled. Vayivrach Be'el Vayelech Be'era, and he fled and he ran to Be'era. Vayeshev Sham Mipnei Avimelech Achiv, and he had to stay in Golus in exile from Avimelech's brother. Which is maybe just coming back to that point, and maybe that the jurisdiction of Avimelech may be somewhat limited in terms of the fact that he has to run to another territory which he doesn't have jurisdiction over. Interesting point to the extent of this kingship.
Do we know where
Be'era is? I do not personally remember this particular point, but one could I could find this on the map. The interesting thing is that we have this fascinating mashal over here that Avimelech is now, well, Yosam is turning to the people and he says this: there are three possible people who could have been leaders. They were the let's start at the beginning. It was the olive, the fig, and the wine, the vine. And then those, when rejecting it themselves, he moves on to the bramble. So, is there any particular reason he chooses these examples?
Olive is Shemaziah.
So, olive is Shemaziah. So, what about leadership? Is that
maybe the finest? You know,
but they're all from the Shiva.
They're all from the Shiva, so many, which are the finest of the qualities. You're right. So it's interesting. The only thing is that they all are, they have a lot to give. Each of these fruits in its own way has a lot to give. Just different types of giving. And Malvin says that maybe we're actually talking about different types of leadership. Meaning the first one is oil, as you said, is something which is always associated with wisdom. That, you know, that the menorah in the Beis Hamikdash, which was burning the olive oil, was always something which represented the seat of wisdom, which is why, incidentally, the Gemara says that if one's davening Shemona Esrei, we always face the direction of the Beis Hamikdash, but you would face a little bit towards the side of the menorah if part of your prayers were to become wise. Because the menorah always represented that aspect of wisdom, which is oil. So
That's why now some women, when they light candles, they light one. If they use candles, they use one oil, so they would have sons would be tummy.
Interesting. So that's interesting. I never knew that. So that there is an idea of oil relating to wisdom. That is very fascinating. So when they turn to this leader, what are they doing? They're asking for, what's the paradigm of leader? The paradigm of leader is somebody who will be a wise leader. The first one is somebody who's going to be a wise leader of the people. The next leader they turn to is the fig. Now, what's interesting about the fig is it talks about its sweetness, right? So the Malbim understands that this is talking about somebody who, okay, you know what, he might not be the greatest intellectual among the people, but you know what he'll do? He'll bring a good economy. There'll be some sort of mutually beneficial relationship. He'll make a sweet economy. We'll have a good financial situation in this economy. That's option number two. They ask.
Rashi says to vote.
So Rashi's gonna give us particular people, but just in terms of just the theoretical realm at this point in time, what these ideas mean. Then finally, the one is somewhere in between. So they said, well, you know, maybe not somebody who excels in this area or excels in that area. Maybe we'll have somebody who's got a little bit of both. He's not the greatest intellectual. He's not the greatest policy manager, but somebody who has a little bit of both. We should go to the one, and each of them refuse for their own interest. That's the kind of the story which the Malvim sees happening over here, in stark contrast to the bramble, because the thorn bush ironically says he doesn't have fruit, he doesn't smell nice, and he also says ironically, you know, if you want me to be the melech, then you should sit in my shade. He has no shade. There is no shade from the bramble. And that's exactly the point. And who's asking? It's prickly, but who's asking for the shade? The tall trees. It's interesting. The trees are asking the shade of the bramble, which is this lowly bush which offers no shade. That's the irony in the fact that he's pointing out to the Baal Shechem when they speak to Avimelech. He's somebody who has nothing to offer them, despite what the way he's asked them. Now, just to get to Faye's point, there may be three things, one quick second. There may be three leaders that he's referring to. It may be referring to three of the previous Shoftim, not all of them, but three of. And they being, Devorah is number one. Sorry, it's Ehud, Devorah, and Ehud, Othniel, Ehud, and Devorah are the three people. And the psukim which are brought to relate how each one represents each one of those. But the point is, now he's talking historically. If you take Rashi and Faye's way of looking at it, it's a historical survey. He's saying, look what happened in the past. Look what we did. You made good choices in the past, or Hashem gave you good choices in the past. Now you are going to make a wrong decision. So it could be either in the theoretical realm, or it could be in the historical realm. The point is the contrast to our Bible. So sorry, Timna, you had a question?
No, I mean, Gideon used...
Yes, oh, fantastic.
Punished.
Exactly. So now another parallel in the story is the fact that Avimelech is being compared to the thorn bush. Where did the thorn bush reappear? Where did it first appear in our story? Was Gideon using it to torture the elders of Sukkos. Now, we saw that there was an aspect of necessity in that incident because he needed to show them that this is a state of emergency, you need to support the king's troops. But there was also the personal element, because when he came back, he said it in a very personal way. Here are the kings, did you not believe me? And he thrashes them with the thorns. It's interesting that aspect of him is pulled out in Yosam's Moshel of Avimelech. Right? We're drawing out, remember when we did the experiment with the different colors? So this will be the Tanakh is pulling out, this symbolism is the split of one aspect of Gideon, which was maybe green when you saw it, when you looked at Gideon, but here's the yellow. There's the one color is coming out into Avimelech. He's becoming the king, and he's becoming this Atad, which is one of the negative aspects of Gideon himself. So it's going to continue. We have a little bit to go now in this next thing. What I would